And if you let that protective shell down, even for a second, it could mean that it's the difference between you flipping out or managing to make it through. And I caught myself letting the shell down, and I tightened up right away and started laughing about it and joking about it with the flight engineer. And he sort of moved on the same logic, because I guess he caught, it sort of knocked his shell down, too.
Excuse me, Duff. James. We're running out of considerable amount of time. Uh-huh. Quickly, could you go over the mistreatment of the POWs and the feeding of the Vietnamese the poisonous food?
Or right. All right. When we picked up POWs to transfer them to a POW camp, they'd be blindfolded and their hands would usually be tied behind their backs. On a few occasions, not often, I and other people would pistol whip them with our 45s, and when that wasn't cool to do, because maybe we had somebody flying the ship that really wasn't hip to how to off the gook, then we'd just kick them around as we walked around the ship. We also, on the ship, when we hit the LZ, at times we'd drop the ramp down halfway, and like I said, these people are blindfolded and tied, and walk them off the ramp, and it's literally like walking off this table, blindfolded with your hands tied, so they just fall flat on their faces. Also, during test flights, we'd go to a specific area where the pilots could check out the controls, and this would attract a lot of Vietnamese. They would, we'd throw out the sea ration cans that we didn't like, and after they thought they were getting a lot of food, we hand them cans of 5606, which is helicopter hydraulic fluid. It's very poisonous. And I observed one kid that I handed a can of hydraulic fluid, take a good healthy drink out of it before his mother knocked it out of his hand. And he was immediately sick right after that happened. In one incident, we were flying back from Quesong Valley, and we took fire from 6 NVA. Which caused the ship to explode in the air and make a crash landing. Now, on the way down, because our company policy was to just keep on firing, I had fired at all the military targets I could spot, and I looked out across the field, and I spotted a Vietnamese woman, a peasant, running away from the ship. I fired burst of about 6 or 7 rounds into her back before we fired, before we hit the ground. When I was being questioned as to what happened about 2 weeks later by a captain in my company, I told him what we did and what I did, and we both had a good laugh about it. That was pretty much company policy. Also, in Hue, during the Tet Offensive of 68, I observed American fighters and bombers, Phantoms, just dropping bombs and napalm into very crowded streets full of civilians. I mean, I don't know how many people were wiped out in that place. They blamed that on the NVA. Also, I was flying tail gun at the time on one mission into Hue, and just for kicks, the pilot told me to spray a house with my M16. It was occupied, I don't know if the house was occupied, but the area was occupied by civilians. And this was common policy. You kill anything you want to kill, anytime you want to kill it, just don't get caught.
Thank you. Is Kenneth Ruth an ex E-4 from the United States Army?
Well, my job in the service, I was a medic. I was attached out to different...
Speaking to
him. I was attached out to different companies at different times. I just like to say that, you know, each of us could go on all day talking about atrocities that we witnessed. Now, every veteran in here, and it's not just the guys up here, each of us saw many and many of them that we all participated in, so I'm not going to run into a whole bunch that I saw. I just like to name a few. At one time, we were securing artillery, which means we set up a perimeter around them and protect them. And, you know, you might sit there for 4, 5, 6, 7 days, and so we wanted to make sure our weapons were in order. So you test fire your weapons, just shoot them off into for about 2 minutes or so into the distance. Well, we were told one day that we had to test fire our weapons and to prepare to do it. Well, many of us knew that on the other side of these bushes out in front of us was a whole village of people, and that if we did test fire our weapons, those people would be in jeopardy. So I approached the platoon leader and the platoon sergeant and told them this, that there were civilians on the other side of the village, the bushes. And I was told, first of all, by the platoon leader that he just didn't care. And when I approached the platoon sergeant about it, he said that he'd shoot a mountain yard as fast as he would a Kong, so it didn't make any difference to him. And this is, you know, nobody else cared. This is a general attitude. You know, Vietnamese aren't humans. They're targets. And one other thing I just like to point out is when I was one time attached out to the special forces, once in a while they needed a medic, and I usually volunteered, quote unquote, to go along with them. And one time, I have some slides of this. Can you show these slides?
Well, can we have those lights dim, please?
See, this is I just like this is to point out some of the intelligence and modern interrogation methods used by a modern and sophisticated war machine. This is just to give you an idea of how we go into a village and get information on enemy movements and things like this. This is our special forces. Okay, this isn't really, you can't see it too well, but just that big guy there, point him out, Jack. He's a special forces officer, probably an enlisted man. He was a sergeant. And what we do is we go into the village and first of all ask people who they think are Viet Cong. Can you show the next picture? So we were given two people that we were told were Viet Cong. See, what we do is we took these two guys out to the field, and we strung one of them up in a tree by his arms, tied his hands behind him, and then hung him in a tree. Can you point him out? Can he be seen there? Okay. Okay, go to the next two. The next one, skip the next one and go to the last one. Okay, put your head back there. Okay, there you can clearly see the prisoner there being strung up into the tree. And point out that special forces man on the far side of the picture, the big guy. Up. Yeah, that's him right there. That's a special forces man. He's just running the whole show. And this is all under their command and everything, and it's not the Vietnamese. Now, what we did to this man when we strung him up is that he was stripped of all his clothes, and then they tied a string around his testicles. And a man backed up about 10 feet and told him what would happen if he didn't answer any questions the way they saw fit. Now, all we had to go by, that we were told that he was a suspect by other villagers. Now, the other villagers weren't going to point out themselves, so somebody had to be pointed out. So they'd ask a guy a question, maybe, well, how many, do you know of any enemy units in this area? And if he said no, the guy that was holding that string would just yank on it as hard as he could for about 10 times, and this guy just be flying all over the place in pain. And this is what they use just to get, I mean, anybody's going to say anything in a situation like this to get answers out of them. And then when they were done, when the guy was just limp and hanging there, the South Vietnamese indigenous troops working with the special forces went up there and then, you know, to get their kicks, would run their knife through his ear or just, you know, carve little superficial scars and wounds on his body. Not deep ones, but just, you know, trickle it down his body, you know, as if to make fun of the guy. We took a guy to the other end of the village, and well, we didn't do this. All we did was burn his penis with a cigarette to get answers out of him. And if, I'm sure people understand what that would be like, especially if it was to yourself or to your children. This is, like I said, this is just one of the things I saw. I could go on all day, all of us could, and every GI in this room could say the same thing. But it's not just us. Everybody knows this. It isn't just Lieutenant Callie. I was involved, and I know there's so many other people involved in all of this American policy in Vietnam. That's all I have to say.
All right. I might state that that Kenneth Ruth is a police officer.
Don't say where.
No, I won't say where. And has a master's degree in, or working on his master's degree in education.
International relations.
All right, the last testimony that we have to give is from myself. I am Michael Hunter, 24. I served in Vietnam two tours. The first tour was from the 1st Air Cav, Bravo Company, 5th to the 7th Air Cav. And the second tour was the 1st Infantry Division, I Company, 75th Rangers, LERPS, in just outside, about 40 miles west of Saigon. The first thing I'm going to bring to you is that I arrived in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive, and the company, Bravo Company, 5th of the 7th, was already outside of Hue. I flew out, and the second day that I was in the field, we came across a boy. He couldn't have been any older than 14 years old. His arm was half, I wouldn't say half, I'd say 90% blown off. It was hanging by skin. I mean, it was hanging up to here. I requested, matter of fact, I didn't request, I demanded from the medical NCO that we had there that something be done about him or else he'd die. It was so, he was so far gone as far as deterioration that he was so, he was stinking. You couldn't stand to stay near his body. The NCO said, no, I don't want to waste my medical gear. There's no use in our wasting our medical gear because if we make contact, we're going to need it because we don't have that readily available medevac or the ships to supply us medical aid. All right, I told my CO, and he said, well, we don't have the time to stop and fix him or to help him. He's going to die anyhow. We've got to move on because we got a mission to perform. That was the first incident. Later, along in between Wei Fu Bai and Camp Evans, which is also in the I Corps area, we had come across, we'd come across, and we had an awful lot of firefights with mainly the NVA. After the firefight was over with, the NVA were laying on the trail. We'd approach the bodies. We'd shoot again to make sure that they were dead. Then we carve, and I would say we, meaning myself also, carve calf patches, what you see on that gentleman's arm right there, into his chest. And after that, if that wasn't sufficient, and this was done quite a few times, the heads of the bodies were cut off. And they were placed on stakes, jammed down on stakes that were placed in the middle of the trails, and a calf patch was hammered into the top of his head with the Bravo Company's B written right on the patch. Now, this hasn't happened just one or twice or one or two times. It's happened five or six times. It just didn't happen in Wei Fu Bai. It happened around the Tay Ninh province also, when the first calf moved north, or south, excuse me. We've also dug up bodies bodies that have been dead and gone for about 3 or 4 weeks when we weren't making that much contact. And we would take the skulls and do the exact same thing, put them on the stakes in the trail and put another cap patch on it. And plus we would use them for body counts, repeated body counts. And what I'm saying, so no one would misquote me, is that the body counts given to the American public is extremely exaggerated. Every bunch of Hoochies that we have come across, and I may say we didn't act around the roads, we didn't take activity around the roads unless we were resting, which was very seldom. A bunch of Hoochies, huts numbering from 6 to 12 and on up, whether they were occupied or unoccupied, they were burned. And if we didn't have the grenades or satchel charges to destroy the sanctuary holes for the Vietnamese, then we would tear them apart by hand. This was standing order for Bravo Company 5th of the 7th, and it was standing order for 5th of the 7th alone. As far as CS or gas is used, we always use CS. CS is the most powerful gas that can be used that will not kill you if you are not in, well, it will not kill you. It can create bodily harm if you're close. Extremely bad burns. My CO of Bravo Company 5th of the 7th gave an order, or I should say gave permission, to all the senior NCOs, the officers, and the enlisted men that were on guard on the outposts to use CS on the civilian population that were conjugating around the fences of the wires. Now, this particular area was a rest area, no more than 50 feet from a village, directly on a road, and directly between a road and a bridge. The Vietnamese farms or their property lied on the other side of the bridge. They had to go past this bridge to get there. Smoke was constantly thrown outside the fence area for people walking by. And when the kids, and I do mean kids, 4 years old, ranging up to 16 years old, came around the fence to sell GI cigarettes or candy or beg for food, they were CS'd. And what I mean is they were gassed. This just didn't happen once, it happened constantly, the whole time we were there, and when we were in base camp also. Only we didn't use CS out of the grenade then, we used CS out of the canister round of the M79, which if you're hit by it, you can be killed. We were in a free fire zone, just outside of Camp Evans, and an old man of the age of 68, which I must say we cannot tell that he was 68 at the time, approximately 100 meters away from us, was cutting pineapple. It was very visible that he was cutting pineapple and that he did not have a weapon. What he had was a machete. Machetes are carried in Vietnam by almost every civilian that works in the field and by the children. I was ordered by the senior NCO that was backing me up at the time, right behind me, to open fire. I opened fire and killed a man that was 68 years old. We found identification on his body stating that he was not a VC, not a Viet Cong, not a NVA. He was a civilian, and he did live in the nearby village, which was no more, and this was a free fire zone, I may add, than 1,200 meters away. That was his farmland that he was cutting down, the crops on the farmland. It was reported to the battalion that this was a body count. He had a weapon, the weapon being the machete. Suspected VC. I served with the I Company 75th Rangers, H Company, with the 1st Air Cav. And as you know, we do not have permission to cross the Laotian border. Up around Ashaw Valley, which you might have heard of or might not have, we crossed twice. And when I say we, I see the teams that I was with. And we located enemy positions, how large the enemy was, his capability, and so on. That's not the thing. The fact is, we crossed a borderline illegally. And you haven't heard anything about that yet.
Could you give us a date on that, Mike?
As far as the date,
year.
As far as crossing the Laotian border, that took place in March 1968, twice.
You're listening to the Winter Soldier Investigation over WBAI in New York City.
Involving the 1st Air Cav. I also served with the 75th Rangers I Company with the attached to the 1st Infantry Division just outside of Saigon. Prior to my getting there in March, April, May, and June of 69, one helicopter of LERPS were sent across the Cambodian borderline, and I may add, this was also illegally because we had no right of sending troops over there. And the chopper was lost. It was hit by a B-40 rocket round and exploded in midair. We lost 7 LERPS and 4 crewmen. Another time was when another team was sent across the borderline, dropped off just short of it, walked across, and was never heard from again. To this day, they are missing in action, presumably killed in Vietnam. Now, as far as atrocities I've mentioned, my company, Bravo Company 5th of the 7th, when we were upside of Wei, just shortly after the Tet Offensive, went into a village, and this happened repeatedly afterwards, and searched for enemy activity. We encountered a large amount of civilian population. The civilian population was brought out to one end of the village, and the women, who were guarded by a squad and a squad leader at that time, were separated, I may say the young women, were separated from their children and the older women and the older men, the elderly men. They were told at gunpoint that if they did not submit to the sexual desires of any GI that was there guarding them, that they would be shot for running away. Now, this was best put in the language as best possible for people that can't speak Vietnamese, and they got the point across because 3 women submitted to the raping of GIs. I think that pretty well does it. I'll have to, yes, question.
Mike, back to the body count. Now, were the body counts, were they just enemy, or were they men, women, and children? You said they were grossly exaggerated. Does that include the men, women, and children?
A body count is a body count, bro. I mean, that's exactly what it says. When the battalion commander calls up and says he wants a body count, if there are men, women, and children laying out there, he gets a body count of that many people. And we usually, we count about 5 bodies, and it gets back there, and it's about 25 or 15 bodies.
I'd like to add something with that.
I know on numerous occasions when we would receive contact in the field, we would call in support, artillery, gunships, by that I mean helicopters, and if necessary, jet fighters. Now, every time someone is killed, there's kind of a dispute over who got them. So the Air Force claims one, the artillery claims one, the infantry claims one, and the gunships claim one. So you've only got one body, but you got four people claimed for it. I don't know, it was my distinct impression that during periods that I was over there, that we weren't winning the war.
Okay, excuse me. I'll open it up to the press now and to questions for a brief amount of time because we're way over time as it is right now. Yes. If anyone, any of the press, hold it, want to find out whether or not I am a veteran or I do exist, they may pick this form up, which has valid proof that I am a veteran of Vietnam, and they can pick it up from our press release, Mr. Steve, what's his name? Jaffe. Now, that's my answer, okay. Later. Any questions? Yes?
I'm not clear on the point I think Robert was making, or somebody else over there, about the role of appointment and how the black GIs are used as appointment. This isn't quite clear. I don't understand that. Could you amplify on that point?
Appointment is a function where the company moving in three ranks, somewhat like a wedge. The point man, he's in the middle column in the front. If there's like any booby traps with a wire, the wire hits him. Any enemy in a position concealed waiting to ambush day or night, point man sees him. That point man should be, you know, super alert, super apprehensive, but, you know, at the same time collected enough to, you know, function. Like if he gets shot at and he's pinned down, he should be able to not only keep things cool to his front, but at the same time get word back exactly what he thinks is up there. It's extremely dangerous. Most point men are either volunteer, if they're volunteer, they're gung-ho and got their just comeuppance, or
right on.
The practice of fragging, which you might have heard about, where certain career motivated personnel have to be disciplined by the EM. The standard procedure is first time, put a CS grenade in his lodgings. You know, he sleeps on a cot and most of the other people sleep in the mud. If he still doesn't straighten up, hand grenade or claymore. This happened to our master sergeant in the 8th Brigade.
All right. Hold on 1 second, please. I'd like for you, the press release, to please repeat your name and repeat the question over again, too, so they can be gotten across to the audience clearly. Yes, and where you're from and what organization you represent. We can go for about two more questions. Yes, it was a young lady in the back.
My name's Marchandell, and I'm from the Detroit Women's Media Co-op. Can I ask a couple questions?
We'd like to restrict you to one right now, if you don't mind.
Okay. People mentioned that there were was brutality done to people's testicles and stuff like that.
You may be able to hear that there's some noise in the background. That's a counter demonstration going on outside the front entrance to the motel.
There was a lot of brutality did at a guy's penis and stuff like that. Could people talk about, you know, what they've seen with that?
Do you want anyone on the panel to answer that question?
Anybody who knows about it?
Yes, Dave.